listening to CPR, communitypublicradio.org. And this is Weekday World. I'm your host, Don DeBar. With a report of some of the news and events of the past 24 hours from the CPR Newsroom. From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
U.S. President Donald Trump made his much-anticipated appearance at the NATO conference in Brussels Thursday. During his time there, he appeared before the press, flanked by his National Security Advisor John Bolton and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. The three answered questions from the media for about 30 minutes, and we bring you excerpts of that here.
Terry McCauley with BBC. Can you tell us whether or not you warned people that the U.S. would pull out of NATO if they weren't meeting their spending goal?
I told people that I'd be very unhappy if they didn't up their commitments very substantially, because the United States has been paying a tremendous amount, probably 90% of the cost of NATO. And now people are going to start, and countries are going to start upping their commitments. So I let them know yesterday, actually. I was surprised that you didn't pick it up. It took till today. But yesterday, I let them know that I was extremely unhappy with what was happening. And they have substantially upped their commitment. Yeah. And now we're very happy and have a very, very powerful, very, very strong NATO, much stronger than it was 2 days ago. Yes, ma'am. Yes, hi. How are you? I know you're very famous on television.
I have a question again about, did you ever at any point say that the U.S., though, might stop engaging with NATO? And do you think that your rhetoric helps NATO cohesion, or are you worried that people might think that the U.S. is going to not be as committed to NATO? There are a lot of people who say they were worried and stressed by what you did yesterday.
Well, they were probably worried because the United States was not being treated fairly, but now we are because the commitment has been up so much. So now they are. And I was very firm yesterday. You have to understand, I know a lot of the people in the room. I was here last year. I let them know last year in a less firm manner, but pretty firm, and they raised an additional $33 billion, I think going to $40 billion, but it's $33 billion as of today. And then today and yesterday, I was probably a little bit more firm. But I believe in NATO. I think NATO is a very important, probably the greatest ever done. But the United States was paying for anywhere from 70% to 90% of it, depending on the way you calculate. That's not fair to the United States. In addition to that, as you know, we're in negotiations with the EU, and we're going to be meeting with them next week. We've been treated very unfairly on trade. Our farmers have been shut out of the European Union. Now, you could say they're different, but basically, to a large extent, they're the same countries. So I think we're going to be ultimately treated fairly on trade. We'll see what happens. But I can tell you that NATO now is really a fine-tuned machine. People are paying money that they never paid before. They're happy to do it. And the United States is being treated much more fairly. Yes, sir.
PBS NewsHour. Did you win any concessions in your meeting and discussions with the German Chancellor when it comes to German defense spending and also this issue of purchasing energy from Russia? And secondly, what would you say to your critics that say by creating this scene here at NATO, you're only enabling President Putin in Russia to further disturb things in Ukraine and Georgia?
Well, if you consider putting up tremendously the additional funds at a level that nobody's ever seen before, I don't think that's helping Russia. I think that NATO is much stronger now than it was 2 days ago. I think that NATO was not doing what they were supposed to be doing, a lot of the countries, and we were doing much more than we should have been doing. Frankly, we were carrying too much of a burden. That's why we call it burden sharing. I was using the term a lot today, burden sharing. We had a fantastic meeting at the end. 29 countries, and they are putting up a lot. Germany has increased very substantially their time period, and Germany's coming along, and we still have to figure out what's going on with the pipeline, because the pipeline is coming in from Russia. So we're going to have to figure that out. I brought it up. Nobody brought it up but me, and we all are talking about it now. And actually, I think the world is talking about it now, maybe more than anything else. But we're going to figure that out. And frankly, maybe everybody's going to have a good relationship with Russia, so there'll be a lot less problem with the pipeline. But to me, that was a very major point of contention. We discussed it at length today. Germany has agreed to do a lot better than they were doing, and we're very happy with that. We had a very good relationship with Angela Merkel. Yes.
Mr. President.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Margaret Tala from Bloomberg.
Yes. After all these years, I know, Margaret. Go ahead.
Thank you. Maybe I'm being dense here, but could you just clarify, are you still threatening to potentially pull the United States out of NATO for any reason? And do you believe you can do that without Congress's explicit support and approval?
I think I probably can, but that's unnecessary. And the people have stepped up today like they've never stepped up before. And remember the word, $33 billion more they're paying. And you'll hear that from the Secretary General in a little while. He thanked me, actually. He actually thanked me. And everybody in the room thanked me. There's a great collegial spirit in that room that I don't think they've had in many years. They're very strong. So, yeah, very, very unified, very strong, no problem, right?
We're in NATO. No, okay.
No problem.
Mr. President, Jonathan Lemire with the Associated Press.
Sure.
You have said previously you wanted the countries to step up their spending to 2%. Yesterday, the suggestion might be 4% or perhaps 2% at a much quicker timetable.
Yeah.
Can you clarify what did they commit to doing?
Yeah.
Is that satisfactory to you?
So what they're doing is spending at a much faster clip. They're going up to the 2% level. Now, you have to understand, some of them have parliaments. They have their own congresses. They have a lot of things they have to go to. So, you know, they're here as a prime minister, as a president, and they can't necessarily go in and say, this is what we're going to do. But they're going back for approvals. Some are at 2%. Others have agreed definitely to go to 2%. And some are going back to get the approval, and which they will get, to go to 2%. After we're at 2%, we'll start talking about going higher. But I said, ultimately, we should be in years in advance. We should be at 4%. I think 4% is the right number. Now, the United States, depending on the way you calculate it, was at 4.2%. And I said, that's unfair. And we have the largest GDP by far, especially since we've increased it by so much since a thing called the election. Our GDP has gone way up. And so the fact that our GDP went way up, that means we're paying for even more, which is very unfair. So I explained that. We will go to much higher than 2% into the future. But right now we're getting people up to 2%, and that'll take place over a fairly short period of time, a short number of years. Okay? Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, Tomislav Krasnec from Večernji List, Croatian daily newspaper. We understand your message.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you. We understand your message. But some people ask themselves, will you be tweeting differently once you board the Air Force One? Thank you.
No, that's other people that do that. I don't. I'm very consistent. I'm a very stable genius. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you, sir. Jeremy Diamond with CNN. How are you?
Jeremy.
Quick question with regards to Germany and the comments that you made yesterday. Do you feel like, given the threats that you made about potentially leaving NATO, about insulting Germany's sovereignty, it appears, by suggesting they are totally controlled by Russia, do you feel like that's an effective way to conduct diplomacy? And secondly, would you be able to be a little bit more specific about the commitments that you secured today with regards to increasing financial commitment? Is there an updated timeline? Are there specific countries you could cite? Because a majority of them were already planning to meet that 2% threshold by 2024?
No, many of them. In fact, Germany was going to be in the year 2028 or 30. Yeah, I think it's a very effective way to deal, but I didn't deal exactly the way you said. I have great respect for Germany. My father's from Germany. Both of my parents are from the EU, despite the fact they don't treat us well on trade. But I think that'll change also. And I think we'll see that, because on the 25th of July, they're coming in to start negotiations with me. We'll see. And if they don't negotiate in good faith, we'll do something having to do with all of the millions of cars that are coming into our country and being taxed at a virtually zero level, at a very low level. But, Jeremy, I think it's been a very effective way of negotiating. But I'm not negotiating. I just want fairness for the United States. We're paying for far too much of NATO. NATO is very important. But NATO is helping Europe more than it's helping us. At the same time, it's very good for us. So we have now got it to a point where people are paying a lot more money. And that's starting really last year. It really had, as you were there last year, and last year we had a big impact. Again, we took in $33 billion more, and if you ask Secretary General Stoltenberg, he gives us total credit, meaning me, I guess, in this case, total credit, because I said it was unfair. Now, what has happened is presidents over many years, from Ronald Reagan to Barack Obama, they came in, they said, okay, hey, do the best you can, and they left. Nobody did anything about it. And it got to a point where the United States was paying for 90% of NATO. And that's not fair. So it's changed. We had a really good meeting today. And we had a great meeting in terms of getting along. I know most of the people in the room because of last year, because of the year and a half that we've been in office, year and a half plus. But we have a great relationship. Everybody in that room, by the time we left, got along, and they agreed to pay more, and they agreed to pay it more quickly. Yeah. Go ahead, Phil.
Hey, Mr. President. Philip Rucker from The Washington Post. You tweeted yesterday, what good is NATO? And you've talked about NATO as an alliance that benefits Europe, that defends and protects Europe. Do you see any value of NATO to the United States vis-a-vis Russia? Does it help protect the United States from Russia, in your view?
I think it's another very strong ally, as together it's much stronger than, obviously, individual countries. I think it's the way we have it now. I think it's a much – I think NATO got – you know what was happening with spending prior to my getting into office. The numbers were going down. Now the numbers have gone up like a rocket ship. The numbers have gone up a lot, and they've gone up rapidly, and they're now going up further. So I think NATO is going to be very, very effective. I'm very impressed with and really know, and he's a friend of mine, but Secretary General Stoltenberg has done a fantastic job in putting it all together. And we were the ones that really, we gave him an extension of his contract, as you know. I think he's done a really good job. I think that when I was saying that, I am very concerned with the pipeline. I don't like the pipeline. And when I talk about NATO, I say, how do you have NATO? And then you have somebody paying the people that you're protecting against. But maybe we'll get along with the group that we're protecting against. I think that's a real possibility. As you know, I'm meeting with President Putin on Monday, and I think we go into that meeting not looking for so much. We want to find out about Syria. We will, of course, ask your favorite question about meddling. I will be asking that question again. But we'll also be talking about other things. We'll be talking about Ukraine. Ukraine was here today, by the way. And, you know, it's very interesting to hear what they had to say. So, excuse me? Well, he may. I mean, look, he may. You know, what am I going to do? If he may deny it. I mean, it's one of those things. So all I can do is say, did you, and don't do it again. But he may deny. I mean, well, you'll be the first to know. Okay? Go ahead. Yes, go ahead.
Mr. President, Robert Wall with The Wall Street Journal.
Yes.
If the Germans and the Canadians and others don't come up to 2%, what is your fallback position? How will you up the pressure to make them actually?
Well, they will. They will. I have no doubt about it. They all made commitments, and they will be up to 2%. It'll be over a period, a relatively short period of years. Okay?
Please. Thank you so much.
Yes, go ahead.
Georgian TV, Politra News. Mr. President, what do you think today needs or not Georgia most support from NATO? And I want to ask about
Georgia? They were here today represented. You
know. Yes. And will you talk about Georgia in a meeting with with President Putin?
Well, they were here. They made a very favorable impression. And we listened to their plight. It's a tough situation with Georgia. But they made a very favorable impression in the room. Okay? Yeah, go ahead. Go. Go.
One more.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, you really did. Come on. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I had a question as well, but nonetheless, I'll ask her. Will you recognize?
Go ahead.
Will you recognize Russia's annexation? Will you recognize Crimea as part of Russia when you meet President?
Oh, that's an interesting question because, you know, long before I got here, President Obama allowed that to happen. That was on his watch, not on my watch. You know, people like to say, oh, Crimea. But the fact is, they built bridges to Crimea. They just opened a big bridge that was started years ago. They built, I think, a submarine port, substantially added billions of dollars. So that was on Barack Obama's watch. That was not on Trump's watch. Would I have allowed it to happen? No, I would not have allowed it to happen. But he did allow it to happen. So that was his determination. What will happen with Crimea from this point on? That I can't tell you. But I'm not happy about Crimea. But again, that was Barack Obama's watch, not Trump's watch. Yeah, go ahead. Sure.
Jeff Mason from Reuters, sure. Mr. President.
I know Jeff.
Regarding your summit with President Putin, will you be raising arms control issues? Would you like to extend New START? And will you raise concerns about violations of the INF treaty?
Yes.
And as a follow-up to the NATO meeting today, will you suggest to him or would you consider stopping military exercises in the Baltic states if that's something that he requests?
Well, perhaps we'll talk about that. But I will say that we are going to be talking about those three issues and many more. We'll be talking about it, Jeff. Okay? Go ahead. Go ahead.
Ivo Caizzi, Corriere della Sera. We are in the NATO headquarters that costed almost the double as planned before. I would like to know if you are planning to guarantee the taxpayers that the new money that is flowing into NATO will be spent in the best possible way, especially the money coming from countries that have several problems with the public finances.
Well, the money will be spent properly. And one of the things that we have many wealthy countries with us today, but we have some that aren't so wealthy. And they did ask me if they could buy the military equipment and could I help them out. And we will help them out a little bit. We're not going to finance it for them, but we'll make sure that they're able to get payments and various other things so they can buy. Because the United States makes by far the best military equipment in the world, the best jets, the best missiles, the best guns, the best everything. We make by far. I mean, that's one thing. I guess I assumed it prior to taking office, but I really learned since being president, our equipment is so much better than anybody else's equipment. When you look at our companies, Lockheed and Boeing and Grumman, what the material, the equipment that we make is so far superior. Everybody wants to buy our equipment. In fact, it's a question, can they make it? Because they are doing very well. Can they make it for so many people? So we are helping some of those countries get online and buy the best equipment. Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, I'm Kristen Brown with Fox News. On your upcoming summit with President Putin, did any of your allies here express any specific concerns or talk to you about any messages that they'd like you to take with you when you go to the summit?
Yeah, just the opposite of concern. They actually, and they'll probably come out with a little bit of an edict, but they actually thanked me for meeting with President Putin. I look forward to the meeting. They thanked me. They thought it was a great thing that I was doing it. And they gave us our best wishes, or their best wishes. Now, with that being said, we'll see what happens. Just a loose meeting. It's not going to be big schedule. I don't think it should take a very long period of time. And we'll see where it leads. But it could lead to productive, something very productive. And maybe it's not. But I think meeting with people is great. We had a great meeting with Chairman Kim. And I'll tell you, Mike Pompeo did a fantastic job. I might ask you to say a few words, Mike, while you're here. Just one second. Mike, go ahead.
On the topic. Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. President. I returned, actually came straight from North Korea with a couple of stops here to Brussels. We had a productive conversation. There remains a great deal of work to do. But I think most importantly, my counterpart, Kim Jong-chol, made a commitment consistent with what President Trump was able to achieve with Chairman Kim, which was they intend to denuclearize, they're going to accomplish it, and now the task is to get it implemented.
I think just to finish on that, you know, it's so important. That was an amazing, really an amazing meeting, I thought. And I really think that we established very good relationships. We'll see where it all lands. But there have been no missile tests. There have been no research. There has been, they have blown up a site. I hear they're blowing up another site, missile site. They've taken down all of the propaganda. In fact, somebody said there's no more music playing at the borderline. You know, the music was going on for many years. They said recently that, wow, there's no more of the heavy music and the propaganda. They've done a lot of things. And we got back our three hostages. So it's a good process. But the main thing is there have been no rocket launches. There have been no missile tests. There's been no nuclear tests, no explosions, no nothing for almost 9 months. Okay. Yeah, please. Sure.
Ewan McCaskill from The Guardian. Your trip to the UK, there are lots of protests planned in London and elsewhere. How do you feel about that?
I think it's fine. I mean, I think they like me a lot in the UK. I think they agree with me on immigration. I'm very strong on immigration. I made a point today. I said, you've got to stop. You're ruining your, you're going to have a lot of problems. You see what's going on throughout the world with immigration. I probably at least partially won an election because of immigration. If you look at Italy, Giuseppe, who I got to know quite well over the last month and a half, he won his election because of strong immigration policies on Italy. I think that a lot of the people in the UK, I think that's why Brexit happened. Now, I don't know what's going on with the negotiation. Who knows? But and I guess that's become a very interesting point of contention. I said I'm going to a few hot spots. We have NATO, then we have the UK, and then we have Putin. And I said Putin may be the easiest of them all. You never know. But I'm going to a pretty hot spot right now, right, with a lot of resignations. But I will say that immigration is a very important thing. And I told them today the EU, the European Union, better be very careful because immigration is taking over Europe and they better be very, very careful. And I said that loud and clear. Yes, go ahead. Go ahead.
President Trump, Radu Tudor, Antena 3, Romania. What yes. will you tell President Putin about this summit and about NATO?
Well, I think he's going to see about this summit. This has turned out to be a very successful summit. This is, I think really that NATO is more put together right now, is more coordinated, and I think there's a better spirit for NATO right now than perhaps they've ever had. It's richer than it ever was. The commitments are made at a higher level than they've ever been made, and the money to be paid out faster, far faster. You know, the 2% was a range, a goal. It wasn't something that they were committed to. Now it's a commitment. There's a big difference, the 2% number. And that's why so many people weren't reaching it or hitting it. It was just sort of like this amorphous number out there. Now it's a commitment, a real commitment. I think he's going to see that there's great unity, great spirit, great esprit de corps. And I think we're going to have a good meeting. Regardless of that, I think we're going to have a good meeting. But this was a fantastic 2 days. This was a really fantastic. It all came together at the end. And yes, it was a little tough for a little while, but ultimately, you can ask anybody at that meeting, they're really liking what happened over the last 2 days. There's a great, great spirit leaving that room. Yes, sir. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Jonathan Beale from BBC. I just wonder, you think you're going to get along with President Putin at that meeting? Could you just tell us, why do you think that? Is there something you admire about him? And the second question, because you're just about to go to the UK.
Well, he's a competitor. He's been very nice to me the times I've met him. I've been nice to him. He's a competitor. You know, somebody was saying, is he an enemy? No, he's not my enemy. Is he a friend? No, I don't know him well enough. But the couple of times that I've gotten to meet him, we got along very well. You saw that. I hope we get along well. I think we get along well. But ultimately, he's a competitor. He's representing Russia. I'm representing the United States. So, in a sense, we're competitors. Not a question of friend or enemy. He's not my enemy. And hopefully someday, maybe he'll be a friend. It could happen. But I just don't know him very well. I've met him a couple of times. And when I did meet him, most of you people were there. Yes.
And Brexit. Sorry, sir, because you are going to the UK. What will be your message on Brexit?
Well, Brexit is, you know, I've been reading a lot about Brexit over the last couple of days, and it seems to be turning a little bit differently, where they're getting at least partially involved back with the European Union. I have no message. It's not for me to say. I own a lot of property there. I'm going to Scotland while I wait for the meeting. I have Turnberry in Scotland, which is a magical place, one of my favorite places. I'm going there for 2 days while I wait for the Monday meeting. But it's not for me to say what they should be doing in the UK. I have great friendships. My mother was born in Scotland. I have great friendships over there. We have a wonderful ambassador, Woody Johnson. And he's doing it. By the way, Woody's doing a great job. But it's not for me to say. I'd like to see him be able to work it out so it could go quickly, whatever they work out. Is it heartbreaking? Oh, hard Brexit, I see.
Nothing about Iraq.
I thought you said it was heartbreaking.
About Iraq issues.
I said, that might be going a little bit too far. Right? Heartbreak. Is it heartbreaking? A lot of things are heartbreaking. No, I would say that, you know, Brexit is Brexit. It's not like, I guess when you use the term hard Brexit, I assume that's what you mean. The people voted to break it up. So I would imagine that's what they'll do, but maybe they're taking a little bit of a different route. So I don't know if that's what they voted for. I just want the people to be happy. They're great people. And I do think sure there'll be protests, because there are always protests, but I think there were protests the night of the election both ways. But in the end, we got 306 electoral votes. And one state that, you know, is interesting, one of the states we won, Wisconsin. I didn't even realize this until fairly recently. That was the one state that Ronald Reagan didn't win when he ran the board his second time. He didn't win Wisconsin, and we won Wisconsin. So, you know, we had a great night. Protests, there might be protests. But I believe that the people in the UK, Scotland, Ireland, as you know, I have property in Ireland, I have property all over. I think that those people, they like me a lot, and they agree with me on immigration. And I think that's why you have Brexit in the first place, because of immigration. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Greta Karvala from Finland. What would be the best deal with Putin when you come to Helsinki? And don't you think that your harsh diplomacy, that you are playing in the same goal, to the same goal that Putin, with your harsh diplomacy towards EU and NATO?
Well, I can't tell you what would be the ultimate. What would be the ultimate? Well, let's see. No more nuclear weapons anywhere in the world would be the ultimate, okay? No more wars, no more problems, no more conflict. Let's find a cure to every disease known to mankind or womankind. That would be my ultimate, okay? And we'll start from there. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Me. There's Mahjub Nowruzi from Afghan Service in BBC World Service. So I would like to ask you, Mr. President, that Afghan President is going to be here.
He's here right now.
Yeah, he is here. And are you going to meet him? And what have you got to say to him?
Ghani.
And when the war is going to end in Afghanistan? Because people are fed up now and they want to know.
I agree with that. I very much agree. It's been going on for a long time. And we've made a lot of progress, but it's been going on for a long time. We've made a lot of progress in Afghanistan, I will say. Yes, your president is here right now. In fact, he's in the room. When I'm finished with this, I'm going right back into that room.
One question, please. Georgian Public Broadcaster, Mr. President, can you tell us what do you think about future membership of Georgia in NATO, please?
Well, at a certain point, they'll have a chance. Not right now. They just left the room. But at a certain point, they'll have a chance. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Barzan Hassan, reporter for Kurdistan 24. Are you going to continue to support the Kurdish forces, Peshmerga, in Iraq? Thank you.
I think the Kurds are great people. They're incredible fighters. They're wonderful, warm, intelligent allies in many cases. As you know, it's different groups of people, but they're great people. I really do. I believe they're great people. Yes, go ahead, please.
Mr. President, Marcus Price, working with ARD German TV.
Yes.
You said Putin isn't an enemy, isn't a friend, it's just a competitor.
A competitor.
Do you consider him as a security threat for Europe or to the U.S.? Thank you.
Hey, I don't want him to be, and that's, I guess, why we have NATO. And that's why we have a United States that just had the largest military budget ever, $700 billion approved, $716 billion next year. No, I hope that we'll be able to get along. I've said from day one, whether it's China or Russia, you know, we're working on trade with China right now. And I don't say that's an easy situation because that's been years of abuse of the United States by presidents, frankly, that allowed that to happen. So I've taken over a lot of bad hands and I'm fixing each one of them and I'm fixing them well. But China is going to be, I think, very successfully, ultimately taken care of. I have a great respect for their president, as you know. President Xi spent 2 days there. It was among the most magical 2 days I've ever lived. And I think we're going to end up doing something very good with China. Right now, we're in a pretty nasty trade battle, but I think ultimately that'll work out. I really think we have a big advantage. You know, we've picked up $8 trillion in value and worth since I became president. And we're close to 2 times the size of China. A lot of people don't know that. And, you know, we're going to negotiate a fair deal if that's possible. Okay. And Russia, I think getting along with Russia also would be a very good thing.
It's the close of a week that began with U.S. President Donald Trump visiting NATO in Brussels, raising questions about the very nature of the Atlantic Alliance. The week closed with Trump visiting the U.K., where he faced street protests and a domestic political situation in serious turmoil. Trump is set to sit down on Monday with Russia's President Vladimir Putin, and with all of these moving parts, we decided it was time for a conversation with international affairs analyst Mark Sloboda. He's a retired U.S. naval officer whose academic credentials include a degree from the London School of Economics, and he's now a senior lecturer in international relations at Moscow State University. We spoke with him via Skype from Moscow Friday. Mark, tell us a little about Trump's latest trip to the continent.
Yeah, it started off in Brussels, where Trump basically crashed the NATO meeting. I mean, of course, as the president of the U.S., he's the biggest guest there, but he probably did more damage to NATO in a single day than has been done by any, certainly any military bloc in its entire existence.
That's right.
it was quite amusing for us who don't agree with the continued existence of NATO, particularly us military vets who don't agree with the continued existence of NATO. Then Trump jetted across the channel to the United Kingdom, where he is now being protested against by huge crowds in London. And he had a meeting with Theresa May, the unelected Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, who is bumbling badly a Brexit deal with the EU. And just before Trump arrived, this caused her Brexit secretary and her foreign secretary, right. Boris Johnson, known affectionately in the United Kingdom as Bojo the Clown. Bojo also quit, saying that Theresa May was making a hash of Brexit, and it was ending up to be Brexit in form, in name only, without any substance and with actually just as beholden to EU laws and regulations, which was, of course, one of the things that those who voted Brexit wanted out of. So while Trump is meeting with this beleaguered Theresa May, who is holding on politically by a lifeline, having just lost two secretaries and so on, he's meeting with Theresa May, something that pretty much both political sides in the United Kingdom have no love for Donald Trump. I mean, I'm sure there's a nationalist minority in the United Kingdom, but the vast majority of the people in the United Kingdom, when even the Evening Standard is taking out full pages against his visit and so on, which is a conservative center-right newspaper, right. Then you know that this is pretty much across the board.
This is the same phenomenon. This is pretty much the same phenomenon we saw in the electoral landscape in the United States during the election, by the way. Not just the Democrats were vehemently against Trump, but so were almost all of the Republican leadership.
Yeah, except in this case, I think it's a large percentage of the British public as well, not just political elite. So as Trump is meeting with Theresa May, and they're walking in together, to a dinner, her fumbling at him, trying to get him to hold her hand, which is was quite a comical sight just to watch that. If you want to try to watch Theresa May holding Trump's hand, I'm sure you can find a vid of it online. Trump had given an interview to The Sun, which is essentially a British right tabloid. Certainly not a paper of record. Anyway, he had given a interview to The Sun beforehand, and as he's meeting with Theresa May, this article was published, this interview with him. And during the interview, he said, "Speaking of Mr. Johnson, who resigned this week as foreign secretary in protest over Mrs. May's Brexit strategy, and who has long been seen as a likely challenge her for her job," Mr. Trump said, "Well, I'm not going to pit one against the other. I'm just saying I think he," meaning Bojo, right, "would be a great prime minister."
Right. No.
"I think he's got what it takes." Yep. "And I think he's got the right attitude to be a great prime minister." He said this while he's meeting with the actual British prime minister.
Exactly.
It's very possible that she could face an internal party challenge from Boris Johnson. And Trump steps right into this. And, the comment, the title I saw from the New York Times was, "With May's government teetering, Trump gives it a shove." And I think that's pretty accurate.
Yep.
I think we got to give the New York Times credit when it is due. And I think that's a pretty accurate title. This is what Trump did. He walked right into this mess that's in the UK, this political mess going on right now. And he just gives it a good shove.
You know, what's interesting, too, if you look at the recent history. Okay, first of all, Brexit, the referendum to exit the EU, on behalf of the UK, won. You know, there's all kinds of, ways to parse the results of that, and also, has that changed? People calling for another one. But the fact is that Brexit won, and that May opposed Brexit while it was pending.
And then
said, "Well, this is what the people wanted, so I will enforce it." Then has mismanaged it, according to just about everybody, certainly according to the supporters of Brexit. And now you're seeing, Johnson and May's main person handling Brexit resigning over the past few days over the, essentially the fact that Brexit hasn't happened, hasn't moved forward, and isn't shaping up in the way that people think, that was chosen by the voters. So they're all kind of bailing on May and her handling of it at the same time that Trump shows up. And so it's kind of an interesting political configuration. You know, the whole, like, landscape is kind of in flux there. And so when he's pushing, he's not just going to push her so she slips and falls, but maybe so the whole apparatus tips over some.
Yeah, and we've got to remember that, you know, the vote went to Brexit, and that was actually a surprise to almost everyone.
Right.
Most people were predicting a 5% swing the other way. Instead, right. It was a 5% swing towards Brexit.
Right.
And, of course, that doesn't necessarily mean that half the British population supports it. It's the half that voted,
that's
which,
right.
You know, in a democratic section, that's what counts.
Right.
So while just over half of, you know, the British population supported Brexit, the other half virulently opposed it. Virulently.
Right.
And this is particular the liberal urban cosmopolitan population, which means the population of London. And that's where Trump, of course, is sitting down in the middle of this. This is Remain, you know, territory. This is Remain right. territory that he's in London, and he has already had various Twitter wars with the Muslim mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, that have over the issue of Islam and immigration and so on. So he's sitting down also into the middle of this, and so during the protests today, quite. A wonderful showcase of the British liberal public's political maturity. This puerile stunt. They've got a giant orange Trump baby blimp flying
right.
over the protests today.
Mm-mm.
And I expect the protest to be quite large, which is really quite amusing because other than rhetoric, there is so very little that Trump has done that Obama wasn't already doing.
Right. You know, well, again, you mentioned how divided the vote was.
It was, yeah.
You know, nationally. It looks like Democrats and Republicans nationally in the United States. You had 51.89% voted leave, 48.11% yep. voted to remain. In other words, Brexit, no Brexit. You have London and the other, you know, essentially where the upper middle class and the managerial class live, voting to remain. They're sort of a cosmopolitan kind of, you know, worldview. Not the internationalist, but the globalist view of things.
Yes.
And those who are skeptical of that and either looking back or looking beyond to their regaining sovereignty were opposed. Now, he's in the middle of London, which was the bastion of the Remain vote on the one hand. So the vote, you know, the protesters are definitely going to turn out there. And like you mentioned, they're polarized like Democrats and Republicans are here. If say, Chuck Schumer were to give a speech in some Midwest city, you would have all the Republicans that were sitting there turning out to protest him, like you do when Trump goes into some place like New York or whatever.
Yes.
But what's interesting, some of the contradictions are, when the Brexit vote was held in 2016, Boris Johnson was the mayor of London.
Mm-hmm.
and he was one of the proponents of
Brexit. He was the biggest proponents of Brexit.
That's right. And Trump also, internationally, was probably the only one who not only accepted the fact that the Brexit vote, you know, was legitimate, but also said, "And hey, by the way, it's a good thing."
Yeah, he did. He did quite famously say that, and
yep.
he has talked about crafting some type of special trade deal with the United Kingdom to compensate for the lack of relationship with the EU,
right.
which the Brexiteers jumped at, but that hasn't really amounted to much except for Trump giving tariffs that
right.
have affected the United Kingdom as much as they have other countries.
Right.
In his, you know, trade war on the world, essentially, as it's going right now. I think, well, of course, we don't know the result of that. Trump may be savvy enough to understand that actually his voice of support for Boris Johnson with the British public would actually go the other way and right. would actually tank Boris Johnson.
Right.
And Boris Johnson has had some rather public unkind things to say about Trump
right.
before.
That's right.
I don't know how self-aware Trump is on his the opinion of him with the British public. I have an unfortunate tendency, I think, sometimes to underestimate the man. But how much he's aware of other countries' political situation, I'm not sure.
Well, the one last thing I would say on this point about Trump is that, you know, from one last thing I have to do is when Brexit won, the first words that we heard out of the political elite here under the uh-oh column was, Trump could win. If Brexit won, Trump could win. Right.
Yeah. So that of course proved to be the case, and that just shows that, you know, the liberal political elite, you know, which includes the media and pundits and everything, you know, have repeatedly underestimated nativist, anti-globalist, populist. You know, we use that word populist, meaning the people who have been hurt by neoliberal economic globalization.
Right.
Populist is somewhat is this dismissive word. You know, what is the opposite of populist? Elitist?
Yeah. right. I know.
I certainly don't believe that anything Trump is doing is actually going to make the economic situation of you know, the people that have been adversely affected by neoliberal capitalist globalization. Now, he's not going to bring their jobs back to the Rust Belt. And I think there was some self-awareness of that. I heard interviews in the U.S. and in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, that they knew or at some level there were some interviews that said, we know that Trump isn't actually going to be able to do much for us, but he spoke to us. He's the only one who
right.
even acknowledged that globalization has hurt us,
right.
because part of the whole propaganda supporting globalization, oh, it's better for everyone, and you can just retrain and get a better job in the city, you know.
Right. That's right.
All right, as a 50-year-old, laborer, you know, used to working in heavy industry, which is of course ridiculous. The right. globalization has had winners, it has had lots of them, and it has had lots of losers,
lots,
too.
Millions. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, and you know, the liberals who, you know, and neoliberals on the Republican side, you know, who supported this all the way, they have always neglected those people, and Trump tapped into that. You know, however unfairly, however he may not in any way be a champion who can help them in any way. You know, and Brexit is a parallel vote that happened in the United Kingdom, because again, it was largely a vote on many ways over globalization and how Britain was tied into the economy and the globalist economy through it, and the loss of sovereignty that Britain faced to the European Union, which is the penultimate neoliberal institution. And speaking of the EU, if we just go back a day to the NATO summit in Brussels, where Trump blew in, already having voiced his opinion many times that he thinks that NATO is an antiquated organization that serves no purpose in today's, you know, post-Cold War world,
right.
You know, which Trump, you know, like the proverbial clock, he's right twice a day. And of course, he
right.
again, right on this.
Right.
But he has been demanding that NATO members live up to the longstanding a guideline that NATO members should spend 2% of their GDPs on their militaries, on what they call defense spending. And there's only 8 out of 29 members of the NATO that actually do that. And the U.S., of course, is one of them, spending far over that amount. The remainders are the United Kingdom, Poland, a couple of Baltic countries, and most of those have and Greece and Turkey, which are spending money on arms against each other, of course.
Right, which is insane.
And Germany and Greece, which is mandated by its bailout deals with Germany and the rest of the EU to buy arms from them. We'll give you some money to bail it out, but you have to spend this percentage of it on weapons that you actually don't really need to help our own domestic arms industries, which is really a sin if I've ever heard one. So Trump blew in, demanded – not only is he demanding quite loudly that not only do they work towards meeting that 2% goal, but they meet it immediately.
Right.
And then when there was, you know, some polite, befuddled pushback from this, from Jens Stoltenberg, he starts in, said during the interview that Germany starts attacking Germany, and he says that Germany is a captive of Russia,
right?
Because they are because they continue to get energy from Russia, and they have signed a deal which is still not 100% finalized for this Nord Stream 2, this pipeline to go under the Baltics that will bring Russian gas directly to Germany. Another Nord Stream 2 pipeline, of course, bypassing the troublesome transit countries of the Ukraine in particular, also Poland. Germany is always looking to increase its use of gas as it moves away from coal to try to be a little bit more environmentally friendly in its energy mixture. It's using increasing amounts of Russian gas. And Trump said that makes them a captive country. And he doesn't understand why the United States should continue to pay more of its military to defend Germany against Russia when Germany is cutting deals, energy deals, and building pipelines with Russia.
Well, the specific thing that he said had an interesting internal logic to it. And he was saying basically, because you have Russia, which has the natural gas easily available through this pipeline once it's constructed. Very logical in terms of delivery. There's no added, fossil fuel weight, like shipping natural gas by boat from the United States. It's not fracked. It's not fracked. It's not destroying, water supplies on the ground. Environmentally, it makes much more sense to do it. Economically, it makes much more sense to do it because the overhead is so much lower because of the location. You know, physically, it makes much more sense because of the proximity. And so Trump is saying, however, you're paying hundreds of millions of dollars to Russia instead of paying it to us. And now you want us to spend hundreds of millions of dollars to defend you from Russia. Don't make no sense. That's what Trump was saying. And it's an interesting statement.
Yeah, it is. Well, in a way, he's actually right, of
course.
Right,
exactly.
Right. Because it points out the absolute contradiction.
Exactly.
Of course, Russia is no military threat, not a conventional military threat to Germany. Russia's
our economic competitor. That's what he's saying. They're not a military threat. They're our economic competitor, and that's what NATO's for.
And he's absolutely right about that.
Yep.
Russia is not going to invade the Baltics. Right. They haven't done anything against the Baltics. They're not going to, run over Poland. My God, you would have to pay Russia to take Poland.
Yeah,
they're
right.
quite happy to let that political problem fester in
on
the
its
EU,
own,
where
yeah.
Poland has lots of disagreements, of course, with the EU government in Brussels.
Right.
But Trump's angle on all of this, of course, is not that. It's that, and when you stop buying Russian gas, you then buy our more expensive
fracked gas.
Liquefied natural gas, which has to be processed at a port at a high cost, shipped much more unreliably than a pipeline across the ocean,
tankers.
And then deprocessed at the other end.
Right.
It makes it much more it would make it very economically uncompetitive for Germany's export-orientated government to start using U.S. liquefied natural gas.
Right.
And he said, on top of it, and you buy more of our weapons, you buy more weapons, because Germany is one of the biggest countries that is not meeting by quite a substantial amount its 2% goal.
Right.
And he said, and you can meet your 2% goal and buy those weapons from us on top of it.
Right.
So
right.
he's essentially his angle is that of a thug, of a protection racket.
Right. That's true. But said, and then another contradiction this whole thing sits on top of, however, and see, the somebody around Trump must know these facts that we're discussing. You cannot just willy-nilly in Germany in particular, but also more particularly in places like Greece, Italy, Spain, France, Spain, Portugal, you know, the places that are really looking at austerity since at least 2008. You can't turn around and tell the public there, look, I know we took away your pensions. I know we've been closing schools and hospitals. I know you're, you know, starving and in foreclosure, but we're going to have to pull out some more of the safety net so that we can pay more money to NATO to protect us from Russia. Doing that is going to put people in the streets, and some of those countries, it may actually end up toppling them. You know, that's the political situation on the ground in Europe.
Now, Russia threat. Meanwhile, it's NATO that is massing troops on Russia's borders, right? It's not Russian troops in Mexico, right?
Right.
It's U.S. troops on the border with Russia, you know, essentially in violation of previous treaties, permanently stationed. They try to say they're not breaking that by having the troops rotate out and new troops rotate in, which of course Russia finds just offensive, right?
Right.
And the EU countries alone of NATO spend four times what Russia does on their military every year.
Right.
The United States alone spends more than 11 times what Russia does on its military every year. Even the U.S. ally Saudi Arabia is now spending alone more money
than
Russia is on its military every year.
Yeah.
But Russia threat.
Also, right? What's interesting about the Russia threat, you had in 1989 – Russia occupying militarily, like the U.S. occupies Europe now, all the way up to Russia's borders, Russia occupying up the center of Germany, more or less, and Russian troops stationed throughout Eastern Europe, you know, in terms of battle plan against if there's a war with Western Europe and the United States. Now, that whole frontier has moved to Russia's borders. So in terms of a Russian threat, quote unquote, it is the smallest that it's been since actually 1917 or whenever the 20s when the Baltics came into the USSR.
Yeah. And the reality of this is that Russia is no threat to NATO, to the EU. It's not going to invade any European country. This is all about Ukraine. This is all about, this is all a consequence, and all this noise is what it's about, is that, you know, the countries of the U.S. and the EU, they openly backed a putsch with what was a Banderite fascist vanguard, overthrow a democratically elected, if flawed, government in Ukraine that was elected by the people of East and South Ukraine, overthrew that, and then begin a war to subjugate the east of the country, to this new seizure of power, which they didn't accept because they had elected Yanukovych previously specifically to prevent these people, not because they loved Yanukovych or because Yanukovych was corrupt free. Yanukovych was corrupt, every previous government, and Ukraine was corrupt. The new West-backed regime is just as, if not more, corrupt. That's Ukraine. They didn't elect him because he wasn't corrupt. They elected him because he was supposed to represent the interests of the ethnic Russian and Slovak Ukrainian East Ukraine, which is heavy industry, Russian speaking, and so on. It's identity issues, East-West identity issues in Ukraine, and the guy they elected was overthrown with open right. Western support and orchestration, with the biggest display of meddling that you can possibly imagine, with U.S. and EU politicians flying into the yeah. center of Kiev, Independence Square, cheering on crowds that were calling for revolution, and then starting up and funding propaganda outlets supposedly instrumental to the Maidan. I'm talking about Hromadske in right. particular here. That was openly funded by the U.S. and Dutch State Departments, whose constant tagline on the station 24 hours a day was Revolutia, which is revolution, right? I mean, yeah, I'm sorry, that was an openly U.S.-backed push. There's an U.S. and EU pact. There's no question about that.
You have John and McCain, and you have Newland and all these people sitting at the head of, on a stage in front of tens of thousands of people that are running out and burning things down and killing people.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they were, throwing hundreds, thousands of Molotov cocktails a day, seizing government Amazing. Buildings. And yeah, there were some pro-EU liberals among them, and there was a lot of far-right ultra-nationalists who were right there with them. When John McCain and Victoria Nuland are doing photo ops with Oleg Tyanybok,
right.
the leader of Svoboda.
Goose stepping his way in, yeah.
Yeah, which was described even in Western mainstream press as fascist, and it was actually condemned in EU Council EU Council reports. They're saying that no one who supports democracy should support this party,
right.
Because they're xenophobic and anti-Semitic and far right and everything. Until they did, because it was geopolitically possible for them to flip the Ukraine.
Right. But
Russia resists against this, right? It gives the people of East Ukraine in Donbass what they need to defend themselves in terms of money and arms, just like the West was giving to, and has propped up the government, the new regime in Kiev.
Right.
And it helps the Crimea, which was almost entirely pro-Russian, the chance to hold a referendum to rejoin Russia, because that's where Russia's Black Sea Fleet was still based.
Right. Sure.
Through agreements reached with the Ukraine that had just been renewed, Russia wasn't going to lose this permanent military port, not to mention the pro-Russian population there,
right.
because of this West-backed push.
Like to do when we talk next week is take a look at the upcoming visit, which is the big event, the summit between Presidents Trump and Putin. Thanks for your time. It's been a pleasure, as always, Mark.
Okay, thanks for having me, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening. You're listening to Weekday World on CPR, CommunityPublicRadio.org. I'm your host, Don DeBar.